Welcome to the Mom Friends Podcast, where we'll chat about all things motherhood with real life experts and moms. We're your hosts,
Rachel
and Kara Ann. So grab a coffee and throw in some headphones and come relate, laugh, and vent with your two new mom friends.
Welcome to this episode of Mom Friends. Today, I'm really excited to talk with Dr. Miriam Kermayer. She's a clinical psychologist and a leading friendship expert. So I think this is going to be a really interesting topic for us to delve into. I know for myself personally and lots of you from what I hear on social media and my work with clients is that a lot of us struggle with friendships postpartum. They change, they get a little more complicated, and they get much harder to keep intact. So I'm really excited to bring you this episode today so that we can learn how to make new friends and how to hold on to the ones that we've already got. Enjoy. Dr. Miriam, thank you so much for joining us today. I think this is going to be a really, really interesting topic for a lot of our listeners. And it's really interesting for me as a mom, you know, trying to navigate this world in the pandemic and in general, especially with friendships. So I think this is going to be a really great topic. Thank you so much for joining.
Yeah, you're so welcome. Thanks for having me. And I'm looking forward to seeing where the conversation takes us.
Yeah. So do you want to just talk a little bit about what you do over on your Instagram page? Because I love following you on there.
Thank you. So I'm a clinical psychologist, and I'm also a friendship expert and researcher. And, you know, part of that work came out of the realization that there aren't great resources available to help us navigate our friendships. And so that was really the motivation behind starting the Instagram community, was trying to make evidence-based, research-based information about making friends, maintaining friendships, sometimes ending friendships and coping with those losses, trying to make that accessible, relatable, and having a space where people could have those kinds of conversations and hopefully ultimately feel less alone and feel a little bit more empowered to cope with those changes because they can be so difficult and lonely, frankly.
Yeah. And it's so true. There are so many resources out there now that are amazing for people in romantic relationships and couples. And, you know, there's obviously so many amazing resources for relationships with our children and parenting, but you're right. There is this huge void in how we navigate our adult friendships. And for me personally, and I think probably a lot of our listeners too, like those are some of the relationships that change the most as we become adults and especially as we have kids. Is that what you find as well?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so in my clinical practice where I work with clients who are struggling with or going through, you know, different life changes and transitions and struggles across the board, I don't only focus on friendship. I work a lot with different types of relationships and different relationship struggles. I work a lot with people who are struggling with anxiety and stress and depression and, you know, all of these really human experiences. But a big part of my clinical work does focus on friendship. And I would say life transition periods, right? When we're having these big changes with respect to where we live, what we're doing, who we're spending our time with, how we see ourselves and how we feel about ourselves. Those are the times when we see drastic changes in our friendships as well. And so certainly the transition to parenthood and motherhood is one of those moments where our friendships can really change. And yet they also happen to be essential, right?
Right,
so important to have that community and sense of connectedness, because parenthood can be, again, quite lonely and confusing and isolating. And so having that support system, both to cope with those changes and challenges, just to get information and bounce ideas off of somebody else, all of that, that becomes so important and hard for us to get sometimes.
Yeah. And I think I hear this all the time too, is like, you know, during the pandemic, especially moms have really felt so extra isolated and just really needing community and a village and just people to talk with to feel normal. And I think that that's been like one of the biggest losses for parents during this year, is just not having those resources and those adult relationships.
I'm just going to say, I'm glad that you labeled it as a loss, because it really is in many ways, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that the most meaningful thing we can do for ourselves sometimes is to acknowledge that this is a real loss and to grieve it in a sense. And I certainly relate to what you're sharing on a professional level that has been kind of echoed by a lot of the people that I work with, but also personally. So I am actually due with my second child.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank
you. Oh my gosh.
I know. So I mean, it's incredibly exciting, but it's also been a struggle, right? To go through this process of getting pregnant, being pregnant, having my other son home with me during this time. Mm. And it's, you know, there are meaningful parts to this, obviously, but there are a lot of losses too. And I think that acknowledging it and putting words to our experience can be so, so comforting.
That's really true. And I hear that all the time about how, you know, sometimes it's enough to just know that you're not the only one going through something. I think a lot of, I think there's a lot of like shame and maybe even embarrassment in adulthood when we don't have a lot of close friends, or, you know, when we don't have like a huge group of girlfriends that we can, you know, go on trips or go on, you know, dinner dates with, because it, I don't know, it feels like it's like a failure or something, or that you're doing something wrong because everybody else seems to have it. So I think there's so much to unpack in the world of social media as well, but there's that added pressure, right? That like, oh my gosh, everybody seems to have these amazing mom friends or this amazing group of women and I don't. What's wrong with me?
That experience with shame comes up so often in the context of our friendships. And that's not to say we don't struggle in our other relationships, right? We can feel that loneliness and that longing for a partner, for family in whatever form that takes, but there isn't necessarily the same type of shame. And I think part of that is really because we talk openly about how awkward and uncomfortable and frustrating dating can be, and how layered and loaded family relationships can be, but we don't have the same open discourse about our friendships. And so the result is we're struggling and yet we feel alone. And that's where that sense of shame comes from.
For sure. So when you're working with clients on, you know, relationships with friendships in general, or, you know, trying to maybe pursue new friendships, what are kind of the first steps to working on that you would take?
Yeah. You know, it depends obviously on who the person is and where they're at.
Yeah.
And what they're coming in for, because making friends, keeping friends, coping with the loss of friendship, those can bring up different experiences and struggles. And so the starting point might be different, but I do find one kind of uniting theme across the board is really this idea of compassion and having that sense of compassion for ourselves, knowing again that we're not alone in this, knowing that it's okay that we find this hard or challenging or confusing, and being the friend to ourselves that we're hoping to find in somebody else, because it's so easy to turn to that place of criticism and personalize those struggles, right? What's wrong with me? I'm not good enough. I don't have enough friends. I deserve this kind of conflict or loss in my life. And there are all kinds of ways that we personalize heartache that really do us a disservice, not only in terms of our mental health, but also our then willingness and ability to go out there and make friends and be vulnerable and invest in our friendships. So I would say self-compassion is often a big, big starting point. And you know, sometimes the place that can come from most easily is recognizing again that we're not alone, right? So right. I do think there needs to be that kind of overt discussion of this is normal to find this hard. It's normal to lose friends. Mm-hmm. This doesn't mean there's something wrong with you. This means you're human.
Yeah. And losing friends, I think, is such an interesting concept to normalize too, because, you know, obviously we normalize breaking up with romantic partners all the time. And, but it can feel so weird and awkward to like just let a friendship end. So I think a lot of times we just like grow apart until we're just not in contact anymore, instead of having that like breakup conversation, which just seems so silly that it would be any different than a romantic partner. If something's not working for one or both parties anymore, you can kind of just, you know, go your separate ways. But for some reason, it feels so awkward and different. Why do you think that is?
It's a great question. And I don't know that there's one answer to this. I think just socially, that hasn't been the norm, right? Mm. That isn't something that we think about doing. We don't see that as an option. We don't enter into our friendships with this idea of it being potentially time limited or a decision having to be made along the way of, is this for life? Is this something
right?
Committing to, right? So the fluidity of our friendships is there, but it can also catch us by surprise. Mm-hmm. So I think that's part of it. Again, certainly we're not doing it. We're not talking about it, but interestingly, so this was part of the research that I did on friendships, looking at not just how we make and keep friends, but also how we end our friendships. And there are different ways that we do this. Part of what you're talking about is this kind of phasing out or fizzling out of the friendship, which works for some people, right? Not engaging as often, not reaching out or initiating as much. Over time, somebody can get the message, or this works especially well when both people are on the same page. But I find even if we don't enter into or initiate a friendship breakup with the intention of having those explicit conversations, sometimes we end up in that place because the other person isn't necessarily picking up on the social cues, or they want that sense of closure, right? We talk about closure so often when it comes to our partnerships, right, and our romantic relationships. And sometimes we want that for our friendships too. And so I do like to at least, you know, bring this to light that we don't have to have an explicit conversation, but it is an option. And sometimes we will end up in that place, even if we don't think we're going to get there. And even if we don't have the intention of doing that.
So what did your research entail? Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. Happy to talk shop.
Yeah. Yay.
So I studied adult friendships for about a decade or so.
Oh my gosh, cool.
And yeah. So it was, you know, a big, huge project that had a lot of different pieces to it under this big umbrella of, again, understanding what we call social competence in friendships. And so that's really just a fancy label for how effective are you? How good are you at making, keeping friendships, at navigating challenges, those kinds of questions. And so what I looked at were three different parts. One, what are the big challenges that are coming up in our friendships? What are the challenging situations that most of us face and that we find really hard and confusing? And then I looked at how do we respond in those situations? What are the different types of behaviors that we're endorsing? So that's where some of these, for example, friendship breakup strategies come in. I also looked at things like different types of apologizing behavior when we've messed up, because we all inevitably do. Mm-hmm. How do we initiate friendships, right? All those questions. And then also looking specifically at which types of responses are most effective. Mm. What are the types of behaviors that we should be doing? So that's kind of a very, you know, general introduction to the work that I did, but actually we then used those data to develop a measure. So we can actually assess how competent somebody is at
fascinating
friendships.
So cool. So it's almost like a quiz or something that somebody would take to find out, or how does that work?
Yeah. So the I mean, you know, people hear about this and, well, who doesn't love taking a quiz, right? I'd love for this to be a little bit more accessible, but the idea is twofold. One, it's really used for research purposes. So to look at then links between friendship challenges and our behaviors, and again, things like mental health, because we know that there's such a close connection and a reciprocal connection actually between our mental wellness and our relationships. Mm-hmm. So when we're struggling in our friendships, we're more likely to go on to develop symptoms of anxiety and depression because it is so overwhelming. Mm-hmm. Just like when we're already struggling, we're more likely to experience difficulties in our friendships. Mm-hmm. And so my hope is that this will be used in research, but it can also be used in clinical settings. So for example, mental health clinics where we're looking to identify people who are struggling socially to then help them in practical ways, right? Here are some other strategies that work. Here's a type of situation that we know is hard for you. And let's talk about how we can make that easier. So that's kind of, you know, where that measure is ending up. But
so cool.
The results of all that I try and make accessible because,
I
again,
love it. I could have used like a child version of this. I don't know if you know that I taught special education for about 10 years. So we would do like little friendship groups with our kiddos. Yeah. And sometimes it was just like, where is this breaking down? Like we needed like a tool like that to figure out like, oh my gosh, what is actually happening here?
Well, there's so much that goes into social skills.
There's so much. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And when you're working with a kiddo with, or an adult, I'm sure, with a disability, it's sometimes you have to really break it down to just like the very smallest behaviors to teach them how to show someone you're interested in them and that you want to be their friend.
Yeah. Sometimes it's a behavior thing. Sometimes it's a situation thing, right? We might have no trouble asserting ourselves in one context, but it's much harder in another for whatever reason. We might have no trouble apologizing to our friends, but it's harder to do that with our partners, right? So the context piece is also really interesting to me.
Context is huge. And I think that comes up with new moms and just parents in general. with friends who maybe, you know, before they had really fluid relationships and could talk things out. And now all of a sudden there's, you know, kids involved and maybe they have disagreements about parenting styles or, you know, what types of schools they're going to send their kids to or whatever. And then all of a sudden it's like hugely awkward and just really difficult to have those conversations. At least I find.
Yeah, it definitely can be. And, you know, you're touching on something so important here, which is that the conversation is often, you know, I have friends or my friend I have children or my friend has children. I don't. And but I think it can be a challenge no matter what, right?
It can
be a challenge when our friends are parents themselves and we are trying to navigate those differences in parenting styles, because that can touch on so many different aspects of who we are.
Nothing will ruffle your feathers more than thinking that your friend is like judging your parenting style or if you have, you know, inner judgments about how they're parenting and it makes you see them in a different light or
our favorite unsolicited advice that just doesn't feel great.
So when you were doing your research, what did you find were the biggest things that would come up as issues in friendships?
Yeah. So, you know, there are different ways to parse this. Certainly there are situations that we call transgressions. So these are situations where one friend has done something kind of egregious, like a very clear violation of boundaries or of the core expectations of friendship. So these would be, let's call them betrayals in many ways. Mm-hmm. A friend has said or done something that has just really shattered the trust. They're inherently unreliable in a way that just makes it very clear that they aren't valuing you or your time, those kinds of situations. The other ones, though, that are really interesting are the conflicts, because those are situations where one person hasn't necessarily said or done anything wrong. It's just this clash. And so when we're talking about some of these parenting differences, those would likely fall under that category of conflict, because it's not, I mean, unless, you know, unless this person is being openly judgmental,
right,
and making you feel a certain way on purpose, for example, that might be a transgression. But being confronted with a situation where a friend just approaches parenting differently, or they are sharing certain ideas with us that we just find very triggering, that's not necessarily a friendship violation, but it can certainly create conflict within the friendship.
Right. Especially if you let it like bubble underneath the surface, but it's hard not to do that because it's also hard to have these open conversations about parenting because we're so vulnerable and we tend to be so sensitive and defensive about the way that we parent. So how do you suggest, I mean, where do you even start with that?
Yeah, this is a great question, right? I'm going to sound a bit like a broken record. There's no one answer.
Yeah.
I think there's the two parts to this. The first is the inner piece, right? Okay. Of making sure that we are taking the time to validate and appreciate our own parenting decisions, right?
Mm-hmm. That's
that
huge.
We are kind of building ourselves up, knowing that we are making the best choice for us, for our child, and for the fit, because it is so much about the fit, right?
Absolutely.
And what works for one child will not work for our next child. And I'm sure I will learn that lesson myself very, very soon.
You will.
Yeah. So I think as a starting point, it helps to just check in with ourselves and again, show ourselves that compassion and really validate our own parenting decisions. Because if we have that inner strength and confidence, not to say it's always going to be there, right? It can wax and wane, but it makes it a lot easier to not then personalize a friend's comments or even their own decisions.
That's so true.
Have very little to do with us.
Yeah.
But there's also the interpersonal piece, because if we think about, for example, our romantic relationships, right, our partnerships. Now, again, this is a little different because presumably the person we're talking about is parenting the same child as we are in some way. And so we're making those decisions together in a sense. But we talk very openly about how important communication is and how we should be having conversations about, hey, when you said that, you know, I took it this way. Is that what you meant? Checking in with curiosity, setting boundaries, being assertive, right? Mm-hmm. And we really don't emphasize that kind of communication in our friendships. And so sometimes it really can be helpful to have an explicit conversation about the thing that's making us feel uncomfortable or yucky or just creating that sense of distance.
Mm-hmm. So really just kind of confronting it head on and naming it and bringing it out into the open.
Yes. Now, there are ways to do this in a delicate,
right? Right. Because you don't want to then put them on the defensive because it's about parenting. It's so, so touchy.
Exactly. So here, a lot of the same ideas and lessons apply that we use a lot in couples therapy, right? So using I statements. So it's not you did, you said this, you made me feel a certain way. It's, you know, I've been noticing that I'm finding this really hard. And here's why I think that might be the case. Is there something that we can do to make this a little bit easier? And I find using that I and we language, right? I'm feeling this and we are a team, emphasizing that sense of teamwork and collaboration. That can be incredibly helpful. And again, emphasizing that you're bringing this up because you value the friendship, not because you're looking for an argument. But so often we avoid having those conversations because we want to avoid the argument, because we want to avoid those feelings of conflict. But the resentment builds, as you've said, and it bubbles over in surprising and unexpected ways and unexpected times. And it can create distance in a friendship when it doesn't necessarily have to be there.
Right. Do you think it's ever appropriate for, you know, if two friends are parenting in a different way? So say, for example, one friend wants to sleep train or has sleep trained, the other chooses not to. Do you think it's ever appropriate to just say, like, let's just agree that we're not going to discuss this because we just, you know, we don't need to try to convince one or the other that that one way is right or wrong? Because like you said, it's a goodness of fit. Everybody can make their own choice for their own family.
Yeah.
So do you think that's ever a healthy thing to do, to just decide not to talk about something?
You know what? It really can be. Now, again, I don't necessarily jump to this for every friendship, for every situation. Mm-hmm. And if you felt like you had to compartmentalize all of your different conversations in one friendship, that might be a, you know, a sign of something else going on.
Red flag. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But this process of compartmentalizing and setting boundaries can be really healthy and really appropriate, right? Especially when you're able to label it, because if both people are aware that this is kind of a boundary that you're setting with the intention of preserving your friendship, both people are much more likely to respect it and to then not personalize it, right? It's not, oh, we're not talking about this because you don't value who I am or my decisions. It's, we're not talking about this because this doesn't work for us.
Right.
And let's see what else we can talk about, right? Let's prioritize the kinds of conversations that do make us feel closer, mm-hmm. and the areas of parenting that we, you know, do connect and agree over.
Right.
Now, again, this isn't necessarily the case for every friendship, right? There are people who are willing and able to have those kinds of disagreements, and where both people can leave that discussion feeling heard and respected, and perhaps they've learned something new, and that can be really healthy.
Yeah.
But if you're finding that this is just a repeated source of tension in your friendship, yeah, setting those boundaries can be very appropriate and helpful. Mm-hmm.
And so we have talked about, in this context at least, you know, parent to parent conversations. But of course, not every friend that you have is going to choose to be a parent, or maybe they're just not at that place yet. So how do you find that those friendships kind of tend to break down or get into trouble when there's maybe one friend that has kids and they're busy and exhausted all the time, and they're wanting to talk about different things now, and the other friend is just kind of like, well, what happened? I still want to like go out to dinner and just like talk about whatever. Like, I don't want to just come over and hang out with your kids anymore.
Right. I want to be friends with you. I don't only want to be friends with your kids. Yeah. Fair. Right. Mm-hmm. Now, yeah, there are, again, two different parts to this. The first is the very real barriers, right? The very real obstacles that are there. You know, being a parent is incredibly time consuming. It does take up a lot of our lives and our mental space. Mm-hmm. There are these huge changes. And so if we're not talking about what's going on or what we're really struggling with or how we're now experiencing the world, we can end up feeling very, feel like we're not authentic, right? We're not showing up as our authentic selves in our friendships. And that doesn't feel good. We really want to be seen for who we are. And so that definitely can create that, again, tension or conflict in our friendships. The other piece, though, that I find is so common are the assumptions that we make. Mm. That a friend who doesn't have children will not want to hear about our kids, right? Or that a friend who does have children should just know that we want to stop talking about their family, right? Mm-hmm. For a brief minute. Mm-hmm. And that's where, again, the piece of communication becomes so important, because if we can approach each other with curiosity, hey, I'm noticing that I'm thinking this, is that true, right? Or, hey, look, here's what I really need from you right now. Is that something you can do for me? Then we can actually start to work together to come up with a solution. Mm-hmm. And I find it, again, just like it's easy to personalize struggles, it's very easy to make assumptions about what somebody else is going through, or the extent to which they should just know what we're going through. Unless it's possible when it comes to dating, when it comes to our friendships, and that's not typically the case. So it really is a matter of checking in with ourselves and thinking, okay, you know, who would I like to connect with? What are the kinds of friends? What's the kind of community I would like to be a part of right now? And then being intentional with how we seek that out. So for some people, especially, you know, right now when so much is taking place online, using friendship apps or finding an online community, a local mom group, whatever it is, that can be incredibly helpful. I mean, there are a lot of online communities too that cater specifically to mothers.
Right.
But sometimes if we can, and if our circumstances allow, it helps to join an activity of some kind, whether that's specifically for parents or not, and put ourselves in a place, again, physical or virtual, where we're likely to connect with people that we share something in common with. I say this all the time, but similarity is often the root of friendship. That is the starting point, right? One person says something, the other person says me too. So that can be as simple as both being parents, although I would say when it comes to close friendships, usually there's more binding us together than just our shared experience of parenthood.
Right.
But early on in a friendship, certainly early on in our parenting journey, can be enough, right? Sometimes we just want to know that we're not alone in it. But it does help, and I think that's why over time to start opening up about other areas of our lives. Who are we outside of our role as a mother, as a parent, as a caregiver? What are we passionate about? What do we value? What activities do we like doing? What do we struggle with? Having those kinds of very real conversations and moments of connection, that's what helps us to feel closeness, trust, security. You know, it also shows the other person that we're interested in getting to know them, right?
Right.
If we're sharing a little bit of who we are and making an effort to ask questions about somebody else, right? Tell me about you. What are you enjoying these days? What are you finding hard? What has this experience been like for you? People like talking about themselves, right?
in a
very healthy way.
Yeah.
It is really nice to be given the space do so. And so I do encourage people to both take up space in their friendships, but also, you know, afford the same to the people that we're trying to connect with, because that type of back and forth and that type of reciprocity really builds that closeness early on.
That's such good advice. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I think this is such a helpful discussion. And can you just let people know where to follow you and find you so that they can get more access to your amazing resources?
Yeah, thank you. So the best place to connect right now is probably on Instagram, like you said earlier. That tends to be a community where I show up the most. So I'm there at Miriam Kermeyer. But if you're also looking for resources or guidance, I have links to all of my articles and interviews on friendship and relationships and mental health on my website. So that's miriamkermeyer.com.
I can link all that in the show notes too.
Yeah, great.
Thank you so much for joining us again, and congratulations and good luck with your birth. I hope you enjoy that new little baby so much.
Thank you. And looking forward to staying connected.
Yeah, absolutely. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Mom Friends. Tune in weekly for new episodes and interviews with us. You can subscribe to the podcast to make sure you never miss an episode. And please leave us a rating and review. Find Rachel on Instagram at Hey Sleepy Baby and Kara Ann at Bloom Baby Wellness.